we present the News Quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
The News Quiz. We start with a cutting from The Guardian, read by Neil Sleet.
Expenses scandals seem to have been viewed leniently by the electorate, with the Conservatives flourishing in constituencies where their members had been exposed.
And our thanks to Paul Trotter for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first on my right, Jeremy Hardy and Susan Kalman. And opposite them on my left, Phil Jupiters and Andy Hamilton. Jeremy, have a listen to this.
Two little boys had two little toys. Each had a wooden horse.
Jeremy, who's got room in his cabinet for two?
Well, I've always admired Liberals, because Liberals have a lot of personal integrity until the day when someone says, "Ah, Mr. Clegg, we've been following your career with interest for some time." Because what's obviously happened is, superficially, there was lots of talks going on between different teams of negotiators, scurrying hither and thither between the parties. And yet, plainly, what actually happened was that at some point, Nick Clegg went to see David. And he's all fired up, saying, "I'm jolly well not going to compromise on things. I'm jolly well going to stick to my guns and all of our liberal principles and policies. If Dave thinks I'm going to run over him before going for him, he's got another thing coming." And he's all fired up and excited. And he arrives at the office and he's shown in. And in front of him is a big table. Behind it is not David Cameron, but three elderly and vaguely familiar Tory grandees. And David is cowering in the corner like Peter Lorre, going, "Hey, you despise me, don't you, Nick?" "David, I don't understand. What's going on?" "Have you met Sir Keith Joseph?" "But I thought..." "Many people do, Mr. Clegg. Many people do."
It was such a turnaround from how they'd got on in the leaders' debate, and you thought, oh, it must have been Gordon causing the atmosphere.
It's like the country now has turned into one of those rubbish buddy comedies they release in August. "He was a right-wing Tory. He was a Liberal. They were brought together by a hung parliament and uh-oh."
It's got to be the fastest personality change by any political party, because in under an hour, the Liberals went from political virgins to hanging around on the street corner with their knickers around their ankles. That is absolutely what they did. They went from, "Oh, we abhor the old politics," to, "Right, let's make a deal. Come on, Governor." What has Clegg got? The only thing of any note that he's got out of the deal is that they're going to look at reforming the voting system so that it's more favourable towards the Liberals in the future. Well, who's going to vote Liberal in the future?
But it is worrying, actually. If you take the blue of the Tories and the yellow of the Lib Dems, their logo's going to look like IKEA. Sort of flat-pack government. They did scrap the ID cards, though, which shows you how confident Nick Clegg is. People know who he is now, so that's...
Down here, you're all very excited, and I don't mean to bring it up, but Scotland, where they all voted for Labour. They all
don't look at me, it wasn't my fault.
It's just all become quite fraught. I like it. It's like a teenage pyjama party gone wrong. It's magic.
It's a statistic that's both comic and true, that there are more Ospreys in Scotland than there are Conservative MPs. Which is true.
I quite like that, because I think now people will start hunting Tories for their eggs.
Well, no. I mean, the way they saved the Osprey, of course, was that they, you know, they had wardens. So they'd have Tory wardens. "Shh. We don't want the Tory being disturbed. It's the breeding season."
And here they are, emerging from their houses, making their traditional mating call.
"With leg pins, darling!
David Cameron's Conservatives and Nick Clegg's Liberal Democrats have entered into an historic coalition. They have become the Ant and Dec of politics. In that people are going to find it hard to tell them apart, and you know that behind the smiles it's only a matter of time before one of them snaps and tries to kill the other. Pensioners are said to be among the biggest winners from the arrangement. Well, I say pensioners. Ken Clark and Vince Cable are in the cabinet. Anyway, 2 points to Jeremy. Susan, who's taking a chance and cutting the cable?
It's about the cabinet and the
it
fact
is.
That...
Oh, phew.
So we got the new cabinet. It came out in dribs and drabs. Obviously, Nick got the deputy role. Vince Cable is not the Chancellor.
No.
Danny Alexander is the Secretary of State for Scotland. And there is one Conservative MP. How upset he must have been. He must have thought, I'm a shoo-in for that job. I'm the only Tory up here. No, it's gone to Danny Alexander, who no one in Scotland knows. And I think it was 8 out of 10 Scottish people thought he was the new signing for Celtic Football Club, which isn't a good start. We've got people like Theresa May. She's the Home Secretary and the Minister for Diversity and Equality. And, gosh, a better choice they couldn't have found. Apart from maybe Jim Davidson. I don't know if he was available. Some old guard, Ian Duncan Smith's, reared his head again.
I had forgotten about him. Somebody asked me yesterday what I thought of IDS, and I said, well, if a couple can't conceive, then... Is it me, or do William Hague, Ian Duncan Smith and Vince Cable look like the same man getting older? I like Vince Cable. He's going to be in charge of business innovation and, I don't know, helping George carry fractions. I don't know what he...
Is he in charge of raising the retirement age? I'm very opposed to that. You don't want to be in a situation where a pilot comes on the tannoy and says, I'm afraid there's going to be some turbulence over the Atlantic, which is annoying because that's when I have my nap.
What about Baroness Wasi? She's a single mother, the first Muslim woman in the cabinet, and her first duty as Tory party chairman will be to cut her benefits and have herself deported.
They all look about 12. I find it a bit weird that I'm now older than the government. I really don't like it. It's a time in my life I wasn't looking forward to, and it's come upon me so suddenly. And they're all so shiny. It's like they've got a coat of Cuprinol on them. Yeah. This is going to be the longest-lasting cabinet we've ever seen, but I mean in the literal sense, you know. They're going to be out in a garden in all weathers, and that face isn't going to stop shining.
There is something terrifying about that man-child face of Michael Gove, isn't there?
No.
You don't know whether to trust it or feed it a rusk.
Why didn't Clegg negotiate a proper job for himself? He's deputy leader, isn't he?
Deputy Prime Minister.
Deputy Prime Minister. But that's not a proper job, is it? That's just a job they created to keep Prescott out of the way, wasn't it? It's just an office at the end of the corridor with a phone that's not attached to anything. There's no job there.
He gets to warm Cameron's slippers and toast his muffins in front of an open fire.
George Osborne has beaten Vince Cable to the role of Chancellor and will take charge of reforming Britain's banks. Selecting the new Chancellor was a tricky choice for the Prime Minister. Vince Cable is a respected economist, but in the end it was decided George Osborne should be the man to deal with the banks, as it's only his savings account that's keeping them afloat. George Osborne is heir to a baronetcy and his father's wallpaper fortune. As a teenager, Osborne rebelled by having his bedroom oak panelled.
I bet Osborne has real wallpaper on his computer.
2 points to Susan. Phil, who stepped down when he couldn't get a Clegg up?
Poor old Gordon Brown resigned. Yeah. It was his last-ditch attempt to try and get a deal going with Clegg and get a rainbow coalition, or as the Telegraph delightfully called it, the coalition of losers. Then when he resigned, the Tories went into a blind panic and started upping all the offers they'd made to Clegg. Electoral reform, 5 seats on the cabinet. The offer they had on the table before that point was Clegg was allowed to choose sandwich fillings alternate Wednesdays for cabinet meetings. So Brown came out in front of Number 10 with Sarah and these two little munchkins. I don't know where they came from. Where's he been hiding them? Gorgeous! Little check jackets, I want one!
It did make you wonder what other possible vote winners he'd been hiding. You know, a secret plan to save the economy, a hidden ability to run a political party, something that he hadn't done.
Those little boys are so sweet, though, John and Fraser. I thought they should have stayed to pick on the Cameron brood when Cameron was in. Geesh, I've done the money, you wee bastard, you.
He did look like a weight had lifted off his shoulders as he wandered off with the kids. I half expected him to get out a kite. Start singing, popping in and out of pavement pictures.
if you were to believe one of the newspapers today, where they had someone following him around taking photographs of him, they were all listening into the last phone call he had with Nick Clegg, and it made me laugh because obviously he's Scottish, and the transcript was he apparently said, "Nick, Nick, I can't hold on much longer." And in my head, I just heard Scotty in Star Trek.
"Nick, Nick, I can't hold on much longer."
Michael Billington in The Guardian wrote that Gordon Brown's exit was worthy of Shakespeare. And I looked at all the pictures thinking he must have been pursued by a bear. There must have been a...
Fundamentally, what happened was Gordon was kept waiting for that job for so long. You know, Blair did that dance of a thousand maybes. And he just worked Gordon up into this sort of tantric frenzy. When he finally got the job, I think he wanted it too much. And I think it sort of all collapsed in on him. In fact, in those last days, I was thinking, well, surely the kinder thing would be just to let him go on believing he is still Prime Minister. I mean, that ought to be possible. Just take him off to a little room and say, "Here are, Prime Minister, this is your special Prime Minister's room. You sit in there and run the country."
I'm amazed you didn't have to give a month's notice. I mean, a job as big as that, you'd think...
He you must know. Still have his keys. He could keep popping back to Downing Street saying he's left things behind. "I've left my dressing gown here somewhere. I won't be in the way. I won't be in the..." "Is that Barack? Can I have a word?"
Hopefully, fingers crossed, that's the end of Mandelson. Although he is a bit like Dracula,
he can't
isn't
be destroyed.
He? No, you put
He'll
a
resurface.
Stake, yeah, put a stake through his heart and he springs to life again.
I would think of Mandelson, it'd have to be steak tartare, darling. Yeah.
And was that weird photo at the sort of apparently the last few moments of Brown, Mandelson and Campbell all laughing in number 10? Did look like they'd just been blocking all the sinks. And...
He should really have left a present, shouldn't he? For it would have been great if Cameron's first morning he wakes up to his cabinet secretary saying, "Morning, Prime Minister. Very busy day. First item on the agenda, the war with China."
Gordon Brown resigned as Prime Minister on Monday, speaking to the assembled press with his wife Sarah outside Downing Street. The atmosphere in Downing Street at the end was described as surprisingly light-hearted but very, very tense, which Radio 4 listeners will recognise as part of the original pitch for Just a Minute. In retrospect, commentators believe Gordon Brown's greatest achievement will ultimately be... Well, worked out by somebody. I can't put my finger on it just for the minute. Right. 2 points to Phil. Andy, let's change the subject entirely. Who's made a crude attempt at dodging the blame?
This is the oil spill. Try and get this right. BP owned the well. Mm-hmm. A company called Transocean owned the rig. Mm-hmm. And I was reading the article, and it got onto the whole question of some dodgy concrete casing that they think might be responsible, and the name of Halliburton popped up. As it always does, Halliburton. It's like some malicious gargoyle squatting over every evil that befalls the world. They're all blaming each other, saying that the stopcock was in the wrong place and everything. And the latest suggested solution, which is a fantastically corporate solution, is they are going to plug the hole by firing rubbish into it. They are. They're going to compact rubbish made from golf balls, bits of human hair. And I just think it's a fantastically typical solution that they're causing all this pollution, and the way they're going to stop it is with more pollution.
And so golf balls, how corporate is that, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, and human hair. Where the hell have they got that from?
Yeah, that's the best
they're
way
shaving
of block...
their employees.
Best,
what
way blocking... best way of blocking a pipe is human hair, isn't it?
That's well, tampons, fantastic. Then, surely. Lots of tampons.
Chip fat that's solidified. Rice. Congealed, overcooked rice. That'll drop it.
Yeah.
Terrorists will sneak down there with Mr. Muscle sink unblocker. Yeah.
Ways they've tried to solve it. The enormous prefabricated dome.
Didn't work, though, did it?
No, they've turned it into a music venue.
But it didn't work because...
They couldn't get Tina Turner out of it.
No, I read about it. It didn't work because some crystals formed on the inside that meant that they couldn't pump the stuff out. You think, well, hang on, surely you've got scientists, haven't you?
Couldn't they lower Michael Portillo down there just to absorb all the oil?
No. I think Michael Portillo would have the reverse effect. BP says it's thrown $350 billion at the rescue operation. Money's quite absorbent. You thought that would have done it.
Can't they mix it with balsamic vinegar and just make a nice dressing?
Whenever they used to have these environmental disasters, you'd always see footage of people shampooing penguins and things, and I miss those days. Once the wildlife is covered in oil, instead of washing it off, take a comb down there, style it.
I think the TV journalists are getting a bit frustrated waiting. They've probably started dunking some cormorants in barrels of oil, you know.
And if you have your news quiz bingo cards to hand, tick dunking a cormorant now.
I reckon cormorants dunk themselves in the oil, because it's really nice having someone else wash your hair for you, isn't it? It's lovely. It's like, ooh, it's like a sort of massage. It isn't pervy. Ooh, this feels
so,
nice.
Oh, anyway, where are you migrating this year?
How do you try and flog a cormorant some products, though, at the end?
Would you like our post-oil slick balm?
At a Senate hearing, BP, Halliburton and Transocean have blamed each other for the oil spill that threatens America's Gulf Coast region. There hasn't been this much finger-pointing since the 1989 ET convention. BP's latest plan is to ram rubbish, such as golf balls and shredded tyres, into the leak to block the hole. And if that fails, they're going to employ a little Dutch boy. So, 2 points to Andy. And I can tell you, at the end of round one, the scores are Jeremy and Susan have got 4 points, but so too have Phil and Andy. We start round two with a cutting from The Independent.
Peter Hurst, chairman of the UK's Fraud Prevention Service, has said the cost of fraud to the UK economy is £30 billion per year. The best way to reduce this is to prevent fraud.
And our thanks to Ian Sturson for sending us that. Jeremy, who got a £1,000 fine and a criminal record in less than 140 characters?
It's a bloke called Paul Chambers, and he's a trainee accountant, aged 26, and he's a Twitter fan, and he went to Robin Hood Airport in Nottingham, because in Nottingham they don't realise that you're supposed to rename your airport after a recently deceased international icon rather than a fictional character from the Middle Ages. Leicester's got Rebecca of Sunnybrook Farm Airport, I think. But anyway, he gets to the airport, and there's very bad snow, and he can't get his plane, and he's all annoyed, so he tweets saying that unless the airport sorts itself out in a week or so, he will blow it sky high. He's then arrested at work. The police take him in, they search his house, they take away all his computer equipment. But they realise they can't realistically do him for threatening a bombing. Because a warning is always appreciated if you're going to do a bombing, but usually about 2 hours is traditional just to give time for the people to evacuate. You know, you don't have a week, because that's time for the airport to be dismantled and moved to a secret location. So they realised that wasn't going to stick. So they thought, we found another law that we can do him under. In the Communications Act, we can do him for menacing the airport. Now, how can you menace an airport? To be menaced, you have to be a sentient being. An airport is the most unfeeling, heartless, soulless thing. Menacing an airport is like undermining the self-esteem of a bus station.
The only way you menace Robin Hood Airport is to build the Sheriff of Nottingham Airport nearby. The idea that now Twitter is being monitored for terrorist threats. Bin Laden's on Twitter. He's always tweeting all the time. I love Justin Bieber. Death to America. Did you see Glee tonight? It was brilliant. Lol. Death to America. Just had spank bowl, death to America.
If you tweet, people do search. So I was on the train with a train company the other day and I was having a moan about the tea. This tea's absolute rubbish. And next thing you know, they tweeted me back and
the company tweeted me back and went,
I'm sorry you don't enjoy the tea. So I tweeted them back and said, no, it's just obviously substandard and the water's, it looks a bit scummy. Tweeted back, well, I'm sorry about that, Susan. If you'd like to come to our main offices, I thought, no way. That's how they get rid of people. If you'd just like to come to our main offices and put your complaint in, no, I don't think so. My family would never see me again. That's all. So they watch what you do.
But I don't Twitter or tweet.
I think you tweet now, don't you?
I do.
Andy, please tell me you don't
tweet. No, I don't tweet.
I love you.
Andy, please post this on random phone boxes.
Yeah, I don't have a computer. I just employ 20 speed writing monks.
Yeah. To do.
Andy doesn't have a phone. He just speaks loudly and clearly, and you can hear every word wherever you are in the world.
It's fine. You people get all these things. I'm just waiting to see if they catch on. That's all. I'm just being canny.
Paul Chambers, a trainee accountant, has been found guilty of a terror offence for joking on Twitter about blowing up an airport. Recent days have seen suggestions from accountancy group RMS Tennant that the new government could institute a Twitter tax, which means it would no longer be economically viable to be that self-absorbed. 2 points to Jeremy. Susan, why should the cougar take heed from the dodo?
It's a wonderful scientific study which says that whilst men who go out with younger women tend to live longer, a woman who goes out with a younger man is more likely to die quicker. And they studied this and saw that it was a stress-based thing, because the social stigma of going out with a younger man meant you die younger. And the thing for me is I go out with someone who's older, so I've made sure our wills are in order. looks like I might get out of the whole arrangement quicker than I thought. But yes, the warning is for the cougars who jump on the younger men like that, watch, because it might kill you.
I didn't know all this terminology. Apparently a sexually aggressive 30-something is a puma. A sexually aggressive 40-something is a cougar. I don't know what that makes me, a bagpuss.
If there's pumas and cougars, is Joan Collins a velociraptor? The fact that they say that they've researched this scientifically, I know that because I watch Miss Marple of an afternoon. You've got a young bloke and an old woman.
Yeah, it's all over, isn't
That's
it?
That's it.
A study of 2 million Danish couples has shown that women who settle down with a toy boy or a sugar daddy die younger, whereas men with younger wives live longer. Famously, Ashton Kutcher is 32, while Demi Moore is 47. Well, bits of Demi Moore are 47. Still, who needs to live forever when she's got such a fine body of work to survive her? During their investigations, researchers studied 2 million Danish couples before the police were called and they had to move on. 2 points to Susan. Phil, who's making a lot of noise about contraception?
Scientists at the University of Carolina have discovered that if you bombard the testicles of a man with ultrasound noise, it stops the testicles producing sperm for up to 6 months. Yep.
You're basically not comfortable with this, are you?
No, really, because the scientists, they're funded actually by the Gates Foundation, and to be honest, the word Microsoft stops my testicles working anyway.
Do you really want to trust your testicles to a machine funded by Microsoft? Version 4 might work, but I'm going to guess version 1 might be a mallet.
Other things that knacker a man's sperm count are heat, caffeine and alcohol, so you can always just dip your testicles in Irish coffee before sex.
I think we should, on a health and safety thing, we should tell listeners at home not to do that. I think that could lead to scalding.
Also, blokes, sitting on the speakers of the stereo won't necessarily do it. Mind you, I can imagine that those blokes driving around in the cars with the massive stereos in the back probably haven't made babies for ages, have they?
Let's hope so. Am I the only man in this room who wants to know, does it hurt?
It doesn't hurt at all.
It's like a beautiful butterfly landing on your scrotum.
You should all try it.
Assume that this procedure happens in hospital. I mean,
no, it's like paintballing weekends. You're just told to run across a field and they fire out.
But maybe it's like solicitors in supermarkets. Maybe they'll just do it in your local Tesco's or Asda's, you know, while your wife's doing the shopping, you nip in and get your knackers done. That'd be mad.
Men will lie, of course, won't they? If a woman asks a man, she says, have you had your bollocks bombarded with ultrasound? She said, of course I have, my darling.
She couldn't tell, could she? It's not like you'd get, like, the stamp on the eggs, you know.
I'm sure they'll use it.
Well, you mean like a kite mark?
They'll give you a tick with a permanent marker or something like that.
Yeah. Ticking for the mark. No, it's
or a little
it's
certificate, yeah.
So not my area. Now, scientists at the University of North Carolina believe ultrasound could be used as a male contraceptive. All that is needed is a quick blast to the testes. And I'm sure I'm not the only woman who's thought that. In 2007, scientists in Italy found that the technique worked on dogs. It wasn't part of their research, just a bit of fun that got lucky. One of the downsides to the method is the cost. A packet of three ultrasound machines cost about £250,000. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along, Mr. Hardy.
It's from The Independent. In Croatia, a referee booked Mladost defender Goran Tunjic for diving in their match against Hrvatski Sokola, only to find he had died of a heart attack. He had a good send-off.
Ms. Kelman.
This is from Raymond Wand. It's from The Telegraph. A local council sent a letter to a woman's pet pig offering the animal the chance to register for a vote in last week's election. After contacting district council bosses to point out the mix-up, Mrs. Grant decided to take Blossom down to her nearest polling station on May the 6th. A spokesman for Weldon District said, "I can confirm no pigs voted in the area last week."
Mr. Jupitus.
Thanks to David Joyce, Milton Keynes, for sending this in. It says here, thousands of stolen toilet rolls were recovered by police in Lancashire are being donated to a local hospice. Hospice Chief Executive Stephen Greenall said, the toilet rolls will be sold in hospice shops to raise money for the facility. He went on to add, it's so much better than the proceeds of crime going straight down the drain.
Mr. Hamilton.
This is from Steve Roberts. It says, a man appeared in court yesterday accused of possessing a picture of a man having sex with a squid. He was charged with possessing an image of someone performing an act of intercourse with a dead animal. But prosecutors amended the charge when it was admitted it could have been an octopus.
Let's take a look at the final score. Phil and Andy have got 11 points, but this week's winners with 12 are Jeremy and Susan. Before we leave you, here is a cutting from the Sunday Times culture section.
This week's CSI Dundee features a visit to an 18th century anatomical collection, which was so influential, the Bishop of Durham donated his own rectum. It is open to the public.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the musicals were Jeremy Hardy, Susan Kalman, Phil Jupitus and Andy Hamilton. In the chair was Sandy Toksvig, and the news was read by me, Neil Sleaze. The chair's script was written by Rodney Crooks, John Luke Roberts and Gareth Quinn, with additional material by James Kettle and John Hunter. The producer was Sam Bryant.